You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Julie Broadway, president of the American Horse Council.
And I'm Emily Stearns, health, welfare, and regulatory affairs liaison for the American Horse Council.
And you're listening to the special monthly American Horse Council episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for March 2025. Good morning, Horse World.
It's time to hear from the American Horse Council in this monthly episode of Horses in the Morning.
Emily, since our last episode, a lot has happened. The groundhog saw his shadow, and we're seeing the results of that all around my neck of the woods. Valentine's Day, President's Day have come and gone, and now we're into Girl Scout cookie season, I heard this week. Hopefully, spring is on the horizon. And speaking of things that are on the horizon, today we are featuring two unique programs that are striving to help sustain and grow the equine industry. So, listeners, these two programs sound like they're focused on racing, and they are, but there's a lot of things that you can learn from the great work they're doing. So keep listening.
And, you know, we spend a lot of time in the horse industry thinking our disciplines are very special and unique. I'm an eventer slash trail rider. Julie's the Morgan gal. And while our own disciplines, you know, we have our own great opportunities, they seem really different. We also have a lot of very similar problems that are kind of starting to spider web out across each other.
Yeah, those challenges are not unique to any breed, discipline, or part of the industry. We see reduced entries. We see loss of access to some activities. We are concerned about social license to thrive or to operate, as some people say. We're all feeling it in our own unique way, and the challenge to you today, listeners, is to take our guest's idea and apply them to your corner of the horse world. So today's episode is brought to you by Piranha. Whether on the back of a horse, at the barn, or watching from the sidelines, there is nothing more annoying than a flying insect. Family owned and made in the USA, and with over 50 years of experience, you can count on Piranha, your trusted leader in insect control, to keep those pests at bay. Piranha, it works.
So, like we mentioned, our guests today join us from the racing world. We have Anise Montplaisir, and please correct me on that, who co-founded Amplify Horse Racing in 2019 and assumed the role of executive director in 2023. Anise grew up near Fargo, North Dakota, and was active in the 4-H Horse Project. She fell in love with thoroughbred racing after seeing the movie Ruffian in 2007 and began spending all the time she possibly could each summer at the North Dakota Horse Park, the racetrack near her family home. After graduating from North Dakota State University in 2017, she moved to Lexington, Kentucky, and completed several industry internships before getting accepted into the Godolphin Flying Start program. And it was during this time that Anise began developing the business plan for Amplify. In her free time, she enjoys playing polo, gardening, and reading.
She's one busy lady. Not to be outdone, Vicki Leonard is our second guest. She's a strategist in perception marketing for the thoroughbred industry, driving initiatives like Kick Up for Racing, which is from Australia, and Light Up Racing in the United States to build public trust and ensure the sport's future. Originally from New Zealand, she holds a bachelor's in science and an MBA and was the top graduate of the 2011 Godolphin Flying Start program. Now, based in Sydney, she owns Kick Collective, a full-service thoroughbred marketing agency with offices in Ireland and Kentucky. She's also the co-owner and managing director of the Thoroughbred Report in Australia and an Australian daily bloodstock publication. So we're excited to have both of them today. Emily, why don't you kick off the interview?
So Anise, did I say your name correctly, first of all?
You're in the right ballpark. It's Montplaisir. It's Montplaisir, a French last name, so it throws everybody for a loop. So even I don't pronounce it correctly. Honestly.
Perfect.
Probably like Montplaisir.
Great. Okay. So Anise, start by giving our listeners some background on why your organization was formed and kind of the goals, overarching objectives.
So the impetus for Amplify, I think, really goes back to myself and my co-founder, Madison Scott's beginnings in horse racing. So Amplify, loosely speaking, is the youth arm of the North American thoroughbred industry. That was our goal when we created the organization, was to have this first step platform for youth and young adults to be able to get involved in racing. And I think for many, many years, a lot of young people, when it came to, well, how, you know, I'm interested in racing, how do I actually get involved? How do I pursue a career? How do I pursue educational opportunities? The first step was to do a lot of Googling and then to make a lot of cold calls and then to sort of stumble your way into opportunities. And so my start in the industry, I saw the movie Ruffian and I was all in. I wanted to learn about and work in horse racing. I already loved horses, but I was so captivated by the thoroughbred industry. For my co-founder, she watched Smarty Jones throughout the Triple Crown, and she's from Austin, Texas originally. So we both came from these non-traditional racing areas. I'll say non-traditional horse areas, and then much less racing. And then she really stumbled her way in through the same way, Googling, trying to find the right opportunities. So we both had this shared goal of creating a platform for young people to be able to get involved in the thoroughbred industry, which is not a new concept in general. Looking at most other countries that are popular with thoroughbred racing, they already had some kind of youth outreach and engagement initiative. And so we wanted to replicate that and bring it to the US in our own way.
And that's something we've talked about a lot, Julie. Like, how do we keep getting youth involved in the industry? And so everybody out there, this is how they're doing it in racing. So as you listen to Anise, think to yourself, okay, how does this apply to my little section of the industry?
Thanks, Emily. So, Vicky, I love the fact that you're a perception marketing firm. That's a great introduction. Talk some more about Kick Up for Racing and Light Up for Racing. What's the overall mission or objective behind the impetus for that?
Sure. So, Kick Up was the original organization. It started in Australia. We've got a big race meeting down here in November each year. And I guess the equivalent to it in America would be the Kentucky Derby. It's called the Melbourne Cup. And it's basically the one race a year where 98% of the general public would stop and put down what they were doing and turn on the races and watch this one particular horse race and get very involved and, you know, having a bet, learning about the horses, learning the stories behind them. And growing up, that's very much how I got involved in horse racing. My family, like Anise's, they weren't in the sport. And I fell in love with racing largely through the Melbourne Cup. However, in the recent years, we've had a few tragedies in the race. And leading up into the year sort of 2001, there had been a spate of fatalities in the event. And these were really catastrophic and very visual on the biggest stage that racing can be showcasing what it does to the Australian public. And it had a hugely negative effect, as you can imagine, on the perception of the horse racing industry. And I've got, you know, a marketing agency at that point in time. It was, you know, only Sydney based, but I've got a young team. I've got, you know, 15, 20 staff, and most of them are in their 20s. And they were really upset, not just at the overall negative perception that was coming through about horse racing, but the misinformation that came with it. Now, this race at that point in time had actually 42 times the equine fatality rate of any other race in Australia. Because it's the only race that most Australians engaged with, they thought it was normal. And they thought that these incidents were typical of horse racing, and then extrapolated that out to a whole bunch of other misconceptions that were simply not true. And I'm sure that, you know, in your disciplines, you'll be seeing this as well, where, you know, they take one example and it just gets massively amplified. And we're in this, not to take your word, Anise, amplified, but we're in this world of social media now, and everyone's got a megaphone in their pocket, and there's very little accountability for the truth. So with that in mind, we set up a kick-up, and initially it was built for essentially my team to be able to have proper conversations with people in a way that it wasn't defensive, but it was actually talking to their curiosity and informing them properly on the horse racing industry and what it was actually about. And we realized there was a real need for this in the broader industry. So we really doubled down on finding accurate information, the correct data, and using vets to get the accurate science through, and then telling those stories and telling that information in a way that's palatable and cuts through to the everyday person. Because a lot of what we talk about and in every part of the horse industry is confusing to people that don't know it. And because it's confusing and because it's complicated, it's really easy for people to believe mistruths because they don't know anyway. So a lot of what Kick-Up has done has been simplifying complex information and bringing the accurate science and the accurate data into a more broader storytelling that can be told to the public. And that soon after we launched in Australia, I was contacted by a mutual friend of Anise and I's, actually, Price Bell, who's is a real visionary for the thoroughbred industry, who said, look, we need this here. Can you help? So soon after that, a Light-Up was born in the US. So we're only pretty fresh in both countries, really, less than 3 years old in Australia and a year old in America. But we've certainly noticed already that just giving people the access to the facts and the information is a really important way to get our truth through.
Julie, I feel like this is a conversation. So again, we have two wonderful representatives from the racing world, but we're talking about youth engagement and essentially social license to operate, right? And gee whiz, doesn't every discipline have their own issues with social license to operate?
Yes, and yes, indeed. We talk about that a lot. And Vicki, I got exposed to Light-Up Racing because at the American Association of Equine Practitioners Conference last year, Dr. Jeff Burke was there, and he spoke on behalf of the program and did a fantastic job. And we really had no idea how quickly this was growing. So it's really intriguing to me. Talk a little bit about how you identify your audience. What are ways you do outreach to get people informed in addition to social media? Because I think you've been doing some training curriculum almost, if you will.
Yeah, so I guess our first step isn't just, you know, shouting information, I guess, to the public. Our first step is making sure our own community has the right tools and the right information to be able to communicate properly. And that was the original goal at Kick-Up too, that was just my staff. I wanted them to be able to have articulated proper conversations and not get angry in that defense and discussion about, you know, about horses and how we utilize them. Because it's very easy when you come across somebody who has a different perspective to you to not get really, you know, you feel the blood boil a little bit and you can feel the anger coming into your face. And it's really hard then to have a proper logical conversation. And the other issue that we've been having is that the information and data and the science isn't easily accessible. It's held by really smart humans and really incredible vets. And the thoroughbred industry in particular does an amazing amount, hundreds of millions around the world every year spent on research. But it doesn't reach the common person, I suppose, but it doesn't even reach a lot of people within the industry. So step one very much is about empowering our own people. And this is a grassroots movement, right? We want, you know, everybody who owns, you know, 1% of a horse, or who works in the stables, or who's a fan and just wants to have a bet on a Saturday, or who just loves the beauty of the horse and so they follow the occasional horse race. We want them to be able to be empowered and have that conversation. And there's two main areas of that. One is pulling in the data, pulling in the science, and simplifying it down. And Dr. Burke has been an incredible person. He heads up the research group of Light-Up Racing, where we've got a team of vets who they give us sort of, I suppose, the complex information, and then we distill it down and try and make it palatable and easily understood. And then it goes back to them where they check to make sure that we haven't dumbed it down too much and it's still highly accurate. And then the other side of that is giving people the tools, the skills, and the confidence to be able to put their shoulders back stand proud and talk confidently about the sport that they love, and explain that, yes, we do have bad eggs. We have people that don't do the right thing, but there are policies, there's an infrastructure to make sure that when those people come, you know, come through, that they are stamped out. And that's, of course, you know, a similar issue to the equestrian industry. Whenever there is somebody who lets us all down, that they are dealt with in a very strong manner, in a very public way. So what we really focus on are those two key things. One is getting the information accurate, getting it clear and getting it in a palatable format. And then the second way is empowering people, the everyday people in the community itself, to be able to discuss it. And that's not just in person, but online as well, because, you know, we've got a lot of keyboard warriors out there. So having those tools to have those online conversations is vital.
I can honestly say, because like you, we work in the horse industry, whenever I go into a room, and people find out I work in the horse industry, I immediately become the expert in the room. And I wish I could say I'm not a veterinarian, I'm not a farrier. You know, there's lots about this industry that I don't have really detailed technical knowledge of. I can talk in general terms. So I'm so impressed that what you're trying to do, Vicki, is mobilize subject matter experts. And as you said, distill that information down into something that people can actually get in their mouth and they can understand and kind of process.
Yeah, and it's not a matter of having all the answers either. I mean, like, I could be having a conversation with somebody and I often go, I'm not actually sure on this correct statistic, and so I'll pull it up on my phone. So it's having that information. If somebody Googles a question and working out what those common questions are, even if they're confronting and difficult to talk about, that there's a proper answer available, and that answer is not put up online by the people that are trying to bring our industry down. So right now, when you Google certain things, and it could be, you know, one of the things that the public find it very hard to get their head around is why horses need to be euthanized sometimes when they break a limb, because that's not relatable to us. And it's also not relatable to our dogs, right? You know, you can amputate limbs. But it's, as we know, it's a very complex system that, you know, the horse's blood flows run through, and having weight on all four hooves is a very important part of that. And so being able to have that conversation with that science background gives you the confidence to be able to talk about it. Now, if you Google why are horses often euthanized when they break a leg, what comes up are the PETA websites and the websites of unsubstantiated organizations that will use any source of information, true or false, to bring our industry down. And so that's where we need to be. And we focus heavily on SEO to make search engine optimization, to make sure, because that's what people do, right? They go and Google questions. And the next step is AI. We're going to need to make sure the AI algorithms are picking up our information too and using that, because it's validated, fact-checked and accurate before they're using, I guess, rubbish, you know, and unsubstantiated claims that are put out there.
It's a really, it's a lot of messaging. And it's one of those things where, you know, you're talking about reaching the general public, but the idea that it's grassroots within our own industry, I think, is really important as well. Anise, so in terms of your audience, are you reaching out to youth directly? Are you reaching out to parents? Are you reaching out to schools? Who do you consider your general audience for Amplify Horse Racing, and how do you end up reaching out to them?
So it's a mix of all of that, Emily. I'm glad that you mentioned all three of those groups, because they're all very intertwined. Generally speaking, you know, youth and young adults would be our first group that we're trying to reach. And when we started looking at when developing our programming and what kind of programming we needed to develop, you know, we wanted it to be as all-encompassing as possible to reach youth where they are and then reach the people who they're connected to. And so naturally, you know, social media and having virtual outreach, virtual events, having a podcast, all of those things were really important to us to make sure that regardless of how close or far a young person lives to a track or to a horse farm, they can have a window into our industry. We can take them behind the scenes into these events. And whenever we're covering a big event on social media, such as the Kentucky Derby, we always take the angle of, if somebody is tuning in for the very first time, maybe this is the first time they've ever watched the Derby on TV, what can we show them behind the scenes and educate them that's going to help to enhance their experience and going to help them stay connected with the sport long term? So social media is a big piece. We have identified events that we feel like it's important for the industry to have a presence at that we haven't historically been super engaged with. So this is a pretty simple one, is Briarfest. A lot of us in the horse industry are familiar with Briar horses. We grew up with Briars. They're a thoroughbred racehorse, Briars. But as Amplify was developing, we saw that the thoroughbred industry didn't have any sort of presence at Briarfest. And that's a event that brings in almost 30,000 people over the course of a weekend to Lexington, Kentucky, a lot of which are youth who probably don't have their own horse, but we can give them the chance to learn about the thoroughbred industry and teach them how they can follow horses through racing. We can teach them how to pursue educational and career opportunities through racing. So event activations have been really important, getting involved at career fairs, making sure that the equine industry and the thoroughbred industry have a presence at local career fairs and exploring how we, you know, expand that across the nation. Our signature program is our mentorship program. Mm-hmm. So we found in a lot of the research for Amplify, a lot of young people who have come to be involved in or work in the industry or eventually became an owner got involved either randomly, like the Googling approach, and then you stumble upon the right connections who open the right doors for you and lead you to the right programs, or they had a parent or grandparent who helped to connect them. And basically that boils down to having a mentor who provided guidance in your onboarding experience to the industry. And we heard a lot of even industry professionals giving advice to young people of, you know, if you want to make a connection in the industry, just Google, you know, just Google and find some people on a farm's website and reach out to them and give them a cold call and they will be happy to help you. But that's not a tangible, like, our piece of advice for how to get people into the industry can't be, well, Google and find someone's phone number or email and send them a cold email and expect that they're going to help you. So we had to create a more formal connection process to help young people establish a mentor. So our mentorship program is geared towards 15 to 25 year olds. We have a spring intake and a fall intake. The less experience, the better. Basically, if you're interested in learning more about careers with horses or learning about the thoroughbred industry or just how to get more involved, you can apply. There's an interview process. And then based on what your interests are, we'll pair mentees with an industry professional mentor, either virtually or in person, depending on where our mentors are located, where you're located. We have mentors from many different states. And then we'll facilitate that mentor connection over the course of 3 months. So we've really built on that program to the point of offering, we now offer travel award grants where mentees can apply through us and we'll provide funding for them to travel to Kentucky during certain points of the year. So for our spring mentees, we'll have a really cool Derby Week experience that they can apply and get funds to attend. For our fall mentees, that'll probably be based around Keeneland. So we want to make sure that we're also providing that, you know, in-person piece as well. If you are a virtual mentee, if you're in Utah or, you know, North Dakota or Texas and you live nowhere near a racetrack, you can become a mentee and then you can apply to get travel award funds to then travel and actually be immersed in the industry. So we do a variety of programs. We're starting to dive into curriculum development. You mentioned educators and parents, making sure that we're creating resources that can be used in the classroom. And so on our side, we're really learning more about the creation and delivery of that. We create networking opportunities. We've worked with horsemen's groups to deliver educational programs at racetracks so they can engage with their local communities and bring people into the tracks. So we're trying to cast our net as far and wide as possible to get people involved regardless of where they are. We've created all these different touch points.
And okay, and this is going to sound like I'm getting nitpicky about one specific detail you mentioned 3 minutes ago, but you said your mentor-mentee program goes up to 25, which I think is a really interesting number and a really unique number. Because I think a lot of people think, okay, youth engagement, we have to focus on the 18 and unders, you know, get them before they graduate and then we have them forever. But what about all these folks that are now graduating with equine degrees who maybe don't know where they want to end up in the world, and having that option until you're 25 to go out into a formalized process and maybe not risk something like a working studentship where you don't know what your pay is going to be. You don't know if you're sleeping in an RV or in your car. I think something formalized like that going up to 25 is really cool.
Yeah, that's a good point to bring up. And we've seen a lot of interested applicants in that age group where they're post-university. Maybe they've gone through one job and decided that they want to change careers. And so they want to explore this. It's a free program. You know, they do have different accountability requirements, check-ins. You know, we want to know that they're going to be responsibly working with this volunteer who's sharing their time, but it gives you this really great chance to explore another industry. Within our very first pilot project group back in 2021, we had two interesting students who I'll share with you. One of them worked in accounting. He was early 20s, had always loved racing and had no idea how to get involved. And he ended up moving from Michigan to Lexington, Kentucky, and getting a job as an accountant on a horse farm. And he just didn't know that that was an opportunity that would be available to him based on where he was. So he's one of our success stories. Another one had gone to school as an engineer. Similar thing, where he was working in a completely non-equine field, didn't study equine, grew up as a racing fan, had no idea he could actually be involved in the industry. And he took advantage of every opportunity we put in front of him. He would go on Amplify tours that we would have. He was based in New Jersey during the time that he did the program. He ended up going to New York to take part in some of our New York programs. He traveled to Kentucky to shadow his mentor at a thoroughbred sale at Keeneland. Through that, he ended up getting a job. He continued his engineering job remotely while working on a horse farm in Ocala, Florida, to gain hands-on horse experience. And he has since started his own racing partnership amongst friends and has had great success with that so far. So, you know, we want young people to come out of this program pursuing careers or more in-depth opportunities in the industry, but at the most basic level, even if they just have positive conversations with a mentor, we want them to leave having had a positive experience and developing a better understanding of the industry.
So I'm going to do a quick little segue and be a little self-serving. The American Horse Council has a really robust internship program. We want to do exactly what you're describing. We want to get young people in and expose them to all kinds of things that happen in our industry. And so they're assigned a project, and we love working with them. And we've had some great success stories out of that. This year is the first year we're offering a young professionals scholarship. 5 scholarships will be awarded to young professionals who would like to attend our annual conference. This is our way of getting them exposed to the leaders in the industry and helping them to explore what might be some new opportunities. So we're very much in sync with where you're going with all of this.
That's great to hear. And we're, you know, even though we say we're thoroughbred specific, we're the youth arm of the thoroughbred industry, you know, we want to shout about all educational opportunities to get young people connected to horses. So everything you send our way, Julie, we put it in our newsletter and try to shout it out to our audiences as well.
Well, you've made a great segue for me. So what advice would you give to people who are in other sectors of the industry if they want to try to replicate what you're doing out there? What's one of the things you've struggled with? What's one of the things that you are most proud of? How do you take what you've done and replicate it and grow it in other spaces?
I think that collaboration is so, so important amongst the equine world. And, you know, it's easy to kind of get in your bubble and feel like you have to stay in your bubble, or if you have a new idea, to create your own thing. But there's so many things that are already happening out there that overlap. And so not being afraid to work on areas for collaboration. So, for example, Amplify is working with Light Up on messaging, on outreach. Light Up, Amplify, and there's another organization in the equine industry called Horse Country that's not thoroughbred specific, but by nature of being in Lexington, Kentucky, they work with a lot of thoroughbred farms. So Horse Country really focuses on tours and leaning into tourism and bringing people out to farms and making sure that they have access to farms. Amplify is really youth educational engagement focused, but we don't need to do tours because Horse Country is really, they kind of cover that aspect. So if we have a tour event that we need to do here in Lexington, we can really work with them. Now we're starting to, you know, really lean on Light Up to help us with our messaging, with our outreach. You know, how do we address concerning comments or even just honest questions, you know, with facts about the industry. So I would say if somebody, I've gotten a little bit off track, but it comes back to if somebody has an idea about how to replicate or do a program in their sector of the equine industry, reach out. Like, we're happy to help. We're happy to collaborate. I say thoroughbred, but we're always open to, you know, sharing resources or discussing, you know, overlap or ways that we can help and support other organizations. Emily, you kind of said at the beginning, people get very, I'll use a racing term, blinkers on about their, mm-hmm. you know, sector of the equine industry. And I don't think it has to be that way. I think, you know, we all face very similar challenges, very similar issues. And people who aren't in the equine industry, they don't see various disciplines. They just see horses in general. Like, they don't care if it's racing or driving or show jumping or whatever. They see horses. So if we can collaborate as an equine industry and share resources, I think that's really positive and gives somebody a head start in launching a new program or, you know, launching a new sector of an existing program.
And yeah, I think it's something, you know, Julie and I talk about this a lot, and you just mentioned, so you said blinkers on, but we're all in the industry because we like horses. Like, it should just be that simple. And that means our problems are that simple too, right? That they're all very similar and they're all that simple, no matter how special we all like to think we are. So Vicky, same thing for Light Up Racing and Kick Up for Racing. What advice do you have for other sectors in the horse industry and some of the kind of biggest struggles you've experienced?
There's sort of four main areas to Light Up. And I think this has been the focus to make sure that we don't fall down in one area and pick up in another. So I'll just quickly run through those because it would probably help as a starting point for anybody looking to do something similar in another sector. So we look at the first area is awareness. So that's creating that content around proper information, science and data. And to create the right information there for awareness, we first need to know what are the most common problems and the most common perception issues out there. And that doesn't require a big McKinsey study. It just requires talking to people and writing down the most common questions that you get asked. And we find that that pops up a lot, and there's a lot of consistency in what goes on there. So you need the support of good researchers and good veterinarians, and our industry has an abundance of those. You know, in every sector, I'm sure you all know incredible vets. And they, of course, want to, you know, impart their knowledge and their wisdom, and sometimes just need a bit of help in simplifying it down so it's a bit more understandable for the common person. So, yeah, that sort of, you know, step one is getting that awareness up. Step two is really ensuring that it's transparent. So one of the biggest issues that certainly horse racing finds, and I'd say it's consistent across sectors, is transparency. We operate in our little bubble in our own world and don't communicate particularly well outside it. And we believe sort of that everyone should know what we're up to, even if we don't communicate it. But if an industry is not talking, people will assume that there's something to hide. And their default status will be, well, we didn't know about that, so it must not be true, or this particular piece of information must be true. So transparency is, you know, a crucial ingredient in making sure that everything works, because if we're not open, honest, and true to ourselves and authentic, then people aren't going to believe the information that's put out anyway. Mm-hmm. People are far more likely to trust a piece of information if it comes from somebody they know, even if they only know that person on social media, than they are any type of hierarchy or any type of brand name and organization. So this is where the next ingredient comes in, which is community, which is so important, because it's you and me that need to be disseminating that information, not just a brand name or not just a company putting it out there. And in the racing industry, we've relied on and turned to, or expected, I guess, a lot of the alphabet groups to step up and do this work and shout it from the rooftops. But people aren't going to believe what they say anyway. They say, you know, you're supposed to do that. You're the company that has to say that. But if you have a personal relationship with somebody and give them a piece of information, they're going to believe it because they trust you. They know you. They know where your truth comes from. They know that it comes from personal experience. So that's why these initiatives have to be driven by the people that love the horses, that chose to work in it every day, that have found, you know, this industry and working with horses because they are just obsessed with it. And we're the people that need to communicate that out as individuals. So doing that in a really authentic manner is important. And then the fourth pillar, which is ultimately probably the most important one, is accountability. If we're not doing the right thing, it needs to stop. And one of the biggest issues is to go, oh, but we do this because, and you don't put yourself in the shoes of somebody external going, yeah, but is that actually okay? And just because something's always been done a certain way doesn't mean it should continue. And I think, you know, a lot of the time animal activists, they get put in sort of the naughty corner by us, but for not understanding. But ultimately, they push us to be better. You know, activism's had a really important place in society. You know, we're all women. We wouldn't have the right to vote if it wasn't for activism. So, you know, activists push for change. And even if they're pushing for extreme change, we can meet in the middle and improve and be better. And the way that we treat our animals, the way that we treat our horses, has improved enormously over the last 100 years. I mean, you could look back at Lucian movies, the way the old cart horses were treated. Thankfully, science, knowledge, our commercial resources have improved. But we need to be real about where we stand and what is actually expected. It's not about catering to the whims of extremists, but it's making sure that the everyday American is comfortable with how we treat our horses, because it's right and it's the right thing to do. And that means not just being accountable as a whole industry to the public, but it means you keeping yourself accountable and being like, yeah, am I doing the right thing here? And keeping your mates, your friends accountable, making sure that if you work for a company and they possibly are not doing the right thing, or an organization, or you see something at a show, you need to call it out. Because they're the things that let us all down. And that accountability and stepping up to be better is what's going to make sure that our industry survive and thrive into the future. So the other four areas that, you know, I don't think any of it can work without one of those missing. And so it's really important to keep all that in mind. Like, you know, at the end of the day, as much perception marketing you can do the best perception marketing on the planet, but you can't put lipstick on a pig, you know, it's still a pig. So you've got to make sure that the base is right and the information's accurate, that we're doing the right thing in the first place. And then we can talk positively and proudly about it.
Great. That's awesome. Well, ladies, we have been so appreciative of your time. This is great information. We will definitely put your contact in the show notes. And we encourage people who have been listening to the episode to reach out, learn more about your two programs. So thank you again for making time and joining us today.
Thank you both for having us.
So the next segment of our episode is brought to you by Merck. Today's Merck Animal Health believes that if we do all right by the horse, we'll never do wrong. That's why they're driven by an unconditional commitment to the horse and to the veterinarians in the communities who support them. From infectious disease tracking through their equine respiratory biosurveillance program to building a sustainable profession through the veterinary well-being study to creating equine health products with the highest level of safety and efficacy, Merck Animal Health is unconditional. It's just who they are, and you can learn more at MerckAnimalHealthUSA.com. So, folks, if you're like us, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, you've been perhaps watching the news and trying to decide what aspects of the chaos that are going on in Washington, D.C. and around the country you need to be worried about. For the legislative and regulatory update, we wanted to pick one of those elements of chaos and discuss tariffs.
And also, if you're like us, you're probably wondering, you know, maybe what is a tariff? And that's okay. No stupid questions. But if tariffs or changes to tariffs will impact, you know, your corner of the industry, and I don't compete internationally, I don't import export horses, so what's it all mean to me? So let's talk about it. The good, the bad, and the ugly. And keeping in mind at this point, nothing is set in stone. Everything could change. Washington is just a tornado of executive orders and regulations right now. So maybe everything you're hearing today is going to be totally different by April 1st. Who knows?
So we're here to help. If you don't understand what this is all about or what a tariff even really is, keeping with our standard, we're here to help you understand from a regulatory side of things. And again, as Emily said, no stupid questions. Just think of us like middle school civic teachers here.
Right, exactly. So what is a tariff? We'll start from the beginning. A tariff is a tax, or even simpler, money you pay to the United States government when you import an item from another country. And what this means is the person importing the item pays the tariff. So if I sell saddles and I import a bunch of Devaku saddles from France to New Hampshire, I would pay a tariff or an import duty on these goods. And typically, tariffs from items coming from France right now are about 5 to 7% of the estimated value. So if I'm importing a saddle, even for personal reasons, and it's valued over $800, you're likely paying the tariff.
So how does this relate to customers buying those imported saddles? Well, the saddle salesman would then incorporate the price of the tariff into the overall price of the saddle. Ultimately, the customer ends up paying the tariff through the price of whatever they're purchasing. Now, we've given you a simple example. So what are some other items and countries that the U.S. horse industry rely on? And how will those potential tariffs affect prices? Our answer is, there are many, many items we rely on from Mexico and Canada, two countries that we currently enjoy many tariff-free or low-tariff imports from, and two countries where tariffs of 25% of the goods value have been floated.
And 25% is a lot. So the northern part of the U.S. imports a significant amount of hay, shavings, grains for feed production, oil and fuel, we're talking diesel, heating oil, vehicles like trucks and trailers, steel and aluminum for production of things like trucks and trailers and construction and barns, farm equipment, lumber for construction, medication and vaccines, and even more from Mexico. The list is kind of ongoing. And the same goes for U.S. or from Canada, and the same goes for U.S. imports from Mexico. The list is very long of things we use.
And on top of that, we're also having a thriving import-export scene with horses going across both land borders for sale and competition. We don't yet know how livestock imports will be affected, as the current guidance from the federal government is not clear.
So, let's use imported hay as an example. Why are we importing so much hay anyway? You know, one question I've heard is, we can just make it here if it's going to cost too much. Well, as the U.S. has grown and rural areas have become more developed, combined with a changing climate impacting growing seasons and kind of good years and bad years, we've lost significant production capacity for hay. So in 2022, we saw the lowest hay crop in the United States since 1974. And this means if we don't have enough hay to feed our livestock, we need to import some. And if that flow of imported hay stops, we don't have the ability to meet that capacity, at least in the short term. And we would likely see both a very serious hay shortage and very high prices as supply and demand fluctuates.
If the generalized 25% tariff goes through, you could expect prices on imported items to increase by at least 25%. On top of that, importers and business may choose to discontinue items altogether that they don't feel are worth the new sale price to consumers, especially if those items aren't produced in the U.S. And overall, we would see significant price increases related to all aspects of horse ownership, from grain and feed to barn construction to the cost of diesel, as she mentioned. The cost of everyday care for horses would probably increase rapidly, and that doesn't even factor into our competition and recreation activities.
So, Julie, from one horse owner to another, what can horse owners, competitors, and businesses do about tariffs?
Oh, great question. So, as we say, since we're an advocacy organization, it all starts with calling your congressional representatives, both in the House and the Senate. Get loud. Let them know how this would impact your life. A lot of times we find congressional members don't quite tend to understand how well represented the horse industry is in their districts, and it's up to you to let them know. Here at the American Horse Council, we'll keep doing our part to get the message out to federal agencies and legislators, but your voice is equally as impactful. That grassroots movement is so important. Feel free to reach out to us at info@horsecouncil.org for your legislative and regulatory questions. So thank you for joining us today. We'll provide more numbers and links in our show notes. We invite you to support our beloved horse industry and join the American Horse Council and earn a free subscription to our monthly newsletter, which shares the latest in all legislative happenings, federal and state, as well as more information that horse owners like you need to know.
And follow the American Horse Council on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, and LinkedIn. And you can also subscribe to this podcast's RSS feed. You can subscribe to Horses in the Morning on any podcast player and find all the shows, including ours, on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
And as we always like to say, we are #HereForHorses. Thanks for listening.